Was working. Yeah. Okay, could we start off with apologies? I have apologies here from Councillors Craig and McKee and Hurty. Councillor Michael Carr. Noor Devlin. Did they give you your apologies? Are you just pointing out the empty seats? Yeah. Robert. Right. Roisin. You didn't miss anyone, though. Kid Hogan. Patrick Brown, okay. Okay, well, no declarations of interest. Nobody's anything to do with Phoenix or anything, no? No, no shares.
Shareholders.
Okay, well, our first then, number three is our first presentation is from Phoenix Natural Gas, and we have Denver and Jonathan here who are going to present to us, so I'll pass over to the two gentlemen.
Does get better than this.
No hiding in here.
Very good.
Could we wait till the presentation's over and then we take any questions of that at that stage then?
Excellent. It's a pleasure to be here this evening, and first of all, thank you very much for the invite. The invite to carry out this presentation probably came as a result of in December 2015. Phoenix Natural Gas were successful in applying for a license extension that extended their opportunity to bring natural gas to 13 additional towns outside what was formerly a very Belfast sort of centric license. And nine of those 13 towns, as you know, fall under this particular council area. So the purpose of this evening is really to give council the opportunity to understand a wee bit more about Phoenix Natural Gas. We'd be quite nervous this evening that it was greeted as welcome Fergus Energy, so hopefully I can tell you a wee bit more about Phoenix Natural Gas, specifically the East Down development, and the East Down development of bringing gas to 13 towns, but focusing in on Newry, Mourne and Down, the areas that are going to be of most interest to council members here this evening. And after about 10 or 15 minutes of that, an opportunity obviously to open it to the floor and get any Q&As that are coming through. Phoenix themselves have been about 20 years. This is our 20 years in business, 2016. We kicked off in 1996 and we're the largest network operator in Northern Ireland. In that time, we've had a number of different guises, but it's probably important to state at the outset of this presentation that we no longer are a gas supplier. So the market is, I think, for the better, much more mature now, and we are very much focused on developing the natural gas network and maintaining the natural gas network where we have a license to do so. In that period, over 3,500 kilometres of pipework have been built, close to £500 million worth of private investment putting into that infrastructure, and gas coverage of over 90%. And what gas coverage really means, and Denver will come on to talk a little bit more about that, but when we have the opportunity to bring gas to a town, Downpatrick's, Bath, Crossgar, Ballinahinch, whatever town that may be, we very much approach it from trying to get that entire area infilled with natural gas. We're not volume-led. We don't go for necessarily big, large anchor loads, but we look at bringing natural gas and the benefits of it right across all areas within those particular towns. In our time in Belfast, we have a licensed area of just over 300,000 properties, and to date we've connected about 200,000 of those. So the slide is slightly dated. We're actually closer to about 60% penetration now. So 60% of properties where gas is available have made the decision to connect, whether that be commercial, business or other. I suppose with a GB model, we probably started this a little bit later. We started this 20 years behind that of GB, where they made a very quick transition through from old towns gas to natural gas. We missed the boat on that, and it was 1996, following Phoenix's private investment, did that really kick off in any sort of earnest. Really, the benefits of natural gas, socially, environmentally, economically, stretch right across all different sectors. There's obviously very specific advantages to certain sectors, you know, the domestic sector, that has a big impact on fuel poverty, industrial and commercial, looking at the very latest of appliance technology to make those operations run as efficiently as possible. New build, it appears to be now the choice for all new build properties where they can get access to a natural gas network. And obviously in the public sector, we have about 85% penetration. Public sector is particularly strong. So where natural gas is available, private rented, and the largest landlord, the housing executive, very much embrace natural gas. I suppose before handing over to Denver, second only to the benefits that natural gas brings to properties, to homeowners, to business users, is the opportunities that it creates for local industry. So when you look around the nine towns that we're dealing with this evening, not only will local industry who are already in the plumbing and heating industry have the opportunity to develop their skills, take on new skills, and then get involved in the natural gas industry, but we will see new companies born as a result of the investment and as a result of the infrastructure coming to the towns. Phoenix themselves don't carry out any third-party works. They don't carry out any work inside properties. We bring the gas to the properties, connect them to the main grid, and thereafter it's the householder or the scheme manager, if it's the housing executive, to appoint an independent company. So Phoenix take no role in actually doing that work inside the house. And that makes for, well, it makes for a very, very competitive marketplace for the consumer, but it also means that the Indigenous companies get an opportunity to benefit from this particular investment. Although they are independent companies, they work under an umbrella association called NINGA, which is the Northern Ireland Natural Gas Association. And it has over 400 members, most of these from the supply chain, whether it be installers, retailers, manufacturers, merchants, training centres. They get involved in this association, which allows Phoenix, it's sort of headed up by Phoenix, to really keep a very close eye on standards to evolve the skills of these different independent companies.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now on to the boring engineering part. I'll just start. You can see the animation running here, just showing you our network and how we've constructed it since 1996. So basically, as Jonathan touched on earlier, that gas was brought to Northern Ireland via an undersea pipeline in 1996, which you can see just at the top of the map there, brought gas from Scotland across into Larne to feed the anchor load of Ballylumford Power Station. That then provided the opportunity for British Gas to start a company up called Phoenix Natural Gas to serve gas through Greater Belfast and the surrounding towns. So we were able to install a pressure reduction station at Larne, Carrickfergus, and Knocknagony, just outside of Holywood, and that provides the three main supply points into our network. And then, as you can see, we've over the last 20 years, we've constructed 3,500 kilometres of mains, and currently we have 194,000 customers connected to that. So that brings us on to the new licence area. So, as you can see, even though it's similar in size from an area, point of view to our current licence area, it's a lot less densely populated. So in fact, it's going to take about 10% of the build that we've already constructed. So we're down to about 350 kilometres of pipe to supply over 90% of the potential customer base within the new licence area. That will be around 28,000 properties with an investment of around 58 million. So that takes us on with 13 towns in total. As you can see, we've highlighted in yellow there the towns within your area. But it's Ballygowan, Hillsborough, Balnahinch, Annahilt, Spa, Downpatrick, Saintfield, Tramore, Crossgar, Drumness, Newcastle, Castlewellan and Dundrum. So within those towns, it's going to take around about 260 kilometres of pipelines throughout the towns to allow each customer to avail of a connection at their property. So that takes us on to the mains build program. So when you're building a gas distribution network, it happens in two main phases. Initially, you have to build the bulk mains, which will take gas from your initial point through the rural route to the outskirts of each town. So this shows you the year one bulk build. We're constructing a large 450mm pipe. We actually just started there about a week ago, just outside of Lisburn in the Glenavy Road. And we're heading down along a rural road to Hillsborough, across to Annahilt, and then hopefully by the end of year, just nearly just as far as Balnahinch. Year two will be going from Balnahinch across to Crossgar, Downpatrick and the Spa. And then year three will be the final section of the bulk build, which will take us down as far as Castlewelnd and Drum and Newcastle. So next comes the infill programme. So as we reach each town with the bulk main itself, we will then put in a small supply station, which will then allow gas to be fed into the infill mains. That's the smaller pipes that will be laid throughout town centres and all of the surrounding housing. So the first town that we're going to come to is actually going to be Ballygowan this year. It's easier to supply. It just requires a small extension to our existing network from Cumber. And the rest there that I was talking about will begin next year, with Hillsborough being the first town and so on. So you can see just as we come to each town, we'll be starting our infill and trying to run all the towns in conjunction, just to try to bring our customer base on at the same rate across as many towns as possible to generate as much interest as we can within the area. So the next few slides just show you our main network build within each of the towns. I'll not go into too much detail here, but this just is to reassure you, as Jonathan touched on earlier, we're not here just to feed commercial anchor loads. We're here to supply all the potential customers within each of the 13 towns. So as you can see, we're passing all the potential domestic and commercial customers in each town. So you just can cycle through them quickly here: Castlewell, Crossgar, Downpatrick, Dundrum, Newcastle, Saintfield. The Spa. So you can see we're feeding all the potential properties there, and we're not leaving anyone out. So we shouldn't have anybody complaining that they're not getting gas in their street within each of the towns. So that takes us on to the construction methods. There'll be two main construction methods used in the project. Firstly, open cut, which is, you'll all have seen this before, it's just standard open trench main laying down the carriageway. For the bulk build initially, it's all going to be fairly rural roads, and then when we go into the towns, you'll see us down each one of the streets. We also have directional drilling. That's the method whereby we'll use a machine to bore an underground tunnel and then pull the pipe back through the tunnel, therefore avoiding all of the disruption and environmental impact that would be associated with open cut. So we can reassure you that although for the bulk build, because of the size of the pipe, it's mainly going to be open cut, although thankfully that's all in the rural areas, when we come to do the urban environments, we will be maximising our use of directional drilling for the smaller pipes. Not only is it good environmentally and good for your constituents with regards to disruption, it also saves us money. So at every opportunity when directional drilling is an available method, that's the one that we'll be utilising. So pre-construction planning, what have we been doing so far? Initially, route optimization was a large part of the project. So as you can see just from the map in the top right there, we had three potential routes running between Hillsborough and Balnahinch. Initially, we were going to come along the main Balnahinch Road, but after just a wee bit more investigation, we realised that would have caused quite a lot of disruption with regards to traffic, because with the size of this initial pipe, it requires a road closure. So we've tried to keep everything to the rural roads, and we actually ended up choosing option A, which we're working on at the minute. That's all very rural, residential-only roads with no actual through route for commuters, and it's going to be based on a road closure. So we've already engaged with Road Service, DSD, PSNI and various other stakeholders with regards to any effects and how we can minimise any disruption. We've engaged with local businesses and residents, obviously just in this particular area, but as we come into your council area, we will be speaking to all the major stakeholders and people affected along the route up front, just make them aware of what we're planning to do, and try to understand how we can maybe alleviate any of the issues or any of the concerns they have with the project. We've also went through an environmental management phase. So you can see in the bottom left corner here, we're looking at a river crossing, thinking about what types of construction activities we're doing and putting plans in place before the works are carried out to ensure that any environmental risks are fully controlled. And then with underground investigations, where we've been carrying out boreholes and underground travels just to understand the geology, so that when we come to actually carry out the construction, we don't come up against any underground obstacles or rock formations that may restrict our progress. Just hand it up to you, Jonathan.
A lot of the engagement to date Denver's discussed has really been with statutory bodies to make sure that the infrastructure project gets off to the best possible start. I think in our 20 years doing this, we've learned that as much engagement, as much communication with wider community sort of helps manage expectations and helps keep people right with regards to what is happening in the area that's most of interest to them. So when we do start our build programme, it'll be typical that we're in towns with information centres giving businesses, householders, the opportunity to come down and find out what's happening in their area and what sort of disruption that they can expect, and ask all the required questions. Thereafter, we'll get involved in various initiatives such as a dial before you dig policy, whereby this is going to be new for third-party contractors working in this area to have to consider the likes of gas mains. So we'll be working with contractors working on the carriageways to ensure that they're familiar with the do's and don'ts in that regard. And again, reaching out to local community through education programmes, getting into schools, making kids aware of the dangers of sort of messing around building sites or being in building sites or being in areas where there's any sort of construction happening. And finally, just to, we're all about trying to get this right with regards to an infrastructure programme and an infrastructure construction programme. We're recognised in Northern Ireland as having one of the strongest social initiatives reaching out to the communities that we work in, and as our network extends, we will be extending our opportunity to engage with local areas on different social initiatives. And there's a range of these, but just to pick out one, we have an Energy for Children charity that was established in 2005, and since it was established has raised close to £1 million for local disadvantaged kids. The reason for bringing it up here is this has been quite Belfast-centric, but as our network grows, we're going into 9 towns that are of interest to this audience, 13 towns in total, and we really rely on help from leaders in the community to introduce us to initiatives, kids that maybe slip through the nets of more established charities to benefit from this particular scheme. So when we do start getting into the areas, yes, we'll first and foremost get the infrastructure project right, but we hope that that's just the start of our engagement with the wider community, and initiatives like this give us an opportunity to reach out and find out a little bit more about the communities we're serving. Contact details, again, this is the start of our engagement. It's a little bit different to last Monday night. We presented to Lisburn Castlereagh Council, and on the same Monday we were putting our first spade in the ground. We'd done engagement with the CEO, etc., before that, but I think that this here is well timed, and we're probably about 12 months away from having any sort of impact on your local communities. But I make no apologies for that, and I think it's the best possible time to start talking about it and building up any links that we can with the councillors in the audience and those not here this evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you to Jonathan and Denver. So at this point, I'll open it up to councillors, and Councillor Quinn, you wanted to be first in.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I have a number of questions. The first part of your work, likely here in this council area, was the Newry Warren Point section. And the streets of Warren Point are still dug up.
Sorry, Brian, that was Firmus. This is Phoenix.
Sorry.
Two different companies.
Well, is there a chance? Well, it's British Gas. No. Is that not both companies?
Separate companies.
Parent company?
No.
No. Was there any chance that then those gas links will be linked up to take in Newcastle, Kilkeel and Restrepo?
Our build plan is actually bringing gas down via Annahilt, Ballyhinch, the Spa, and then down as far as Castlewell and Dundrummond, Newcastle. So Castlewell, down beside Newcastle, it's Castlewell and Dundrummond, Newcastle at the moment. Well, I would say that I've not been aware of the towns you've mentioned. If they're within our new East Down licence extension area, which you'll be aware of in one of the slides there, if any of those towns are in there, when people apply for it, we're always wanting to expand our network. So if the interest's there, we'll definitely look at it.
You have mentioned rural roads a number of times in your presentation.
Yeah.
When you say rural roads, do you mean the main Belfast to Newry coastal route? and how long do you envisage that road to have lane closures?
Well, we're not actually taking gas to Newry, so we'll not be going along any...
But it's still, that's that main route for any traffic coming out of Belfast to service all of the towns up along our council area. So any disruption to traffic flow affects every town on that that loop.
Well, what I can assure you is that all the roads that we've chosen for this bulk mains build are rural Category 4 roads, so they have no through traffic at all from a daily commute. They only serve the residents that live along those roads. We haven't chosen it, apart from, I would say, off the top of my head, there's about 200-300 yards on a main road just outside of Hillsborough, which we will probably end up doing at weekends, but 99% of the bills will be along rural roads, which shouldn't affect any commuters.
Thank you.
You went red.
Billy. Thank you very much, Chairman. And first I'd like to thank you for your presentation. Very interesting tonight. And I, for one, welcome the fact that you're coming to my electoral area. You're coming to Ballinahinch, Crossgar and Saintfield, because I think it's a good thing. It's going to give the consumer a choice. So it is, and that is a good thing, especially with the markets out there. But one question I would like to ask, and this would maybe complete my area, do you envisage coming to Killyleagh? Don't see Killyleagh in this, but if you did, that would take in all the major towns within my electoral area. But I welcome the fact that you're coming to the other three towns.
Again, not to repeat myself, we have a licensed area now. Killyleagh is within that. And I would be more than happy to extend our network towards Killyleagh. But obviously, we'll have to look at it at that point, see if it's financially viable. But if we can get agreement with the powers that be to allow us to go to Killyleagh, that's something that we would be very interested in the future.
Well, I would encourage you to do so. Okay. Mark?
Thanks, Chair. Again, I'd like to welcome Finnish Gas to the area. I think it's superb that they're coming. It's going to be a real benefit to business and residential. I have a wee bit of a background. I was involved with Keller Gas when Towns Gas was closing down, and it was a great loss, even though I was working for the company that was benefiting. You could see the loss there was to the community that way. The concern, we've just completed a public realm scheme in Ballinahinch. We did engage with the utilities companies, and I believe Phoenix was one of the ones that we engaged with, and we were told at that time that there was no intention of coming to Ballinahinch. So therefore, you didn't need to lay pipes around the streets that we were digging up at that time. Is there going to be a requirement then if every business in Ballinahinch or resident in this town centre, are you going to be digging up our new footpaths again?
Unfortunately, just it's all a matter of timing. So I can assure you that if we had had a license to operate or to engage with you for Ballinahinch, we would have been talking to you up front to try to coordinate our works with the public realm. The public realm has taken place now. So first thing I would say is that I'd be writing saying that the public realm works is mainly in the footpath. So if you look at the initial mains build, that was always going to have to be in the roadway anyway, because the footpaths are already too congested with existing utilities. So straight away, that won't affect your public realm. The bit that will affect the public realm is the customer connections. So the rule that we'll be putting in place there will be that if a customer who lives along a public realm footpath asks for a new connection to the Phoenix main, we will only be installing that service once we have the materials on site to reinstate it as per the spec that it has at the moment. So we'll be going in, it'll be a one-day job, cut through the public realm, install the new service and put it back the way we found it. We won't be doing any... I think some of the problems that have happened with public realm in the past is where people have used a temporary blacktop reinstatement, which has then been present for 2 to 3 weeks, and obviously it's going to be a bit of an eyesore. So we'll ensure that the materials are there before we actually carry out the new service.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, well, there is materials kept, I think, for that purpose.
Yeah, well,
not everybody's as organised as that, so that's good to know.
No, okay.
Are you selling them, Mark, are you?
No, McGann, I'm doing nothing.
Okay, who's next?
Chairman.
Albert Harry.
You mentioned there that you're going through rural roads and you'll be going through the countryside. Will farmers be able to get a connection off that if they ask for supply?
Unfortunately, the main that we're taking along the rural roads is a 7-bar bulk main, and that pressure regime isn't available to a domestic or commercial supply. So, no, the farmers won't be able to avail of gas along the rural roads. When we come to each town, just on the outskirts of the town, we install what we call a pressure reduction session, which will take the gas pressure down to 4-bar or 75 millibar, which then the various constituents can avail of.
I think you're missing a big trick there, because there's a lot of gas vehicles coming on board and farmers are getting very interested in it. If they thought they would get a fill, they could be very handy for them. And you also got the big, what would you call them, hen houses or broiler houses all going. They use a lot of gas. I think you're really missing out there. Is there no way that that can be done?
At the moment, there are other things to take into consideration. The station itself to reduce the supply of gas is extremely expensive, so it only really becomes financially viable when you have several hundred going towards several thousand customers supplied from that station. The other risk that you have to think about is this is a single-fed main down into East Down, so what you don't want is multiple off-takes off that main along the railroad, which then make it potentially vulnerable to someone working in the vicinity. So you like to minimise the amount of pipes connected to that main until it gets to each one of the major urban bases.
Okay. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Charlotte.
Thanks, Chair. Denver, to see the... I can understand the concept of a mains pipe coming into every town. Okay. But I want you to explain to me, take a housing estate, a quarter of a mile off that sort of main street, where the pipe is coming in, and the last house in that fictitious housing estate. How does he get connected, or how do you determine which estates get connected and which don't? And the second question was, now that this has been planned for the area, would you expect contractors to be future-proofing new developments going forward so they're ready for connection?
Your first question, are you talking about a housing estate that wasn't able to avail of gas outside of the area, or just about how we actually take gas to it?
Well, just how you take gas to it. Just the existing houses.
Yeah. So the existing houses, it's simple enough. We'll be bringing within the residential areas, it'll be more than likely that we'll be directionally drilling pipelines throughout the You initially build a spine throughout the town, and you build it, if you imagine, just like a tree. So once you have the spinal feeder main done, then you'll be drilling pipework out into the residential areas right up to the last driveway in your fictitious estate that you mentioned. Then that customer at that point is seen as being live on or passed on our system. They can then contact our customer service or our sales department and ask for a connection, and then we will provide that within, I think, the standard of service, as long as they're within 50 metres of the main, and I think we have committed to carry out the connection within, is it 4 weeks? 4 weeks of the actual customer request. Your second question, sorry, could you repeat that?
That was with new developments. Now that this has been planned, would you expect developers to install the
paperwork
at this stage?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and I think this is what this engagement starts off, trying to build an idea of what the timescales are, because there's a certain period of time in which builders and property developers can make those decisions to accommodate a different fuel coming along the line. I think we probably most successfully did that when we were building just outside Belfast in the sort of late 90s, and places like Bangor and Cumber would have built what they called natural gas prepared sites. So if the builder identifies that he would like to have those properties off natural gas, he will work with companies like Caller Gas who share a lot of similarities with the way that the apparatus of natural gas downstream works, and he will equip it then so that when natural gas becomes available to the specific towns, to the specific streets, then it's a reasonably straightforward connection for the owner-occupier to make. But it has to, the engagement with the builders has to start now to make that a reality, so that people can get the benefits of natural gas and they can do it reasonably cheaply in a conversion. And in fact, the developers that we'd work with, we would usually, that would be built into the cost associated with bringing natural gas there, so that the actual householders didn't have any costs associated with conversion when the time came around.
All right.
Okay, Chair. Thank you, Phoenix, for your presentation. It was very good, very interesting. Maybe you could tell us how and when you would be contacting potential customers, residents, please. Thank you.
Yeah, what is typical is, you know, queries that come from customers will probably, to crudely put it into twofold, they'll have firstly concerns about disruption, about how gas is made available, how streets are being picked, and I suppose just to pick up on that last point, just to re-emphasise, we are looking to go to over 90% of the coverage of the areas that we have. So when we get a licence to go into one of the nine towns that we saw there, 90% of the residents, properties, businesses or householders will be getting natural gas available to them. Our engagement will start when they start seeing the bulk mains, the big gas mains being brought into each town. And I think that's for two reasons. It's one, to be able to have those conversations, to be able to manage expectations and timescales. And it's secondly, probably from a commercial point of view, that the earlier we start engaging with people who have maybe a 15-year-old oil boiler who are considering what their options are, we can let them know what timescales in which they can expect to get natural gas. So the first engagement is at big pipe stage of bringing the pipe into the separate towns. Thereafter, the most successful approach we've had to date is setting up information centres within each town. So that would tend to happen more at info stage, because the reality is that regardless of how early you get there, you tend to get quite a small take-up on people getting interested until the gas is outside their door. So at that stage, whenever we're actually in the streets building this main to actually service householders, we'll have this information centre in place. We'll also write individually to every single householder. And again, that'll be both through disruption to say, we're coming, this is when you might see us, this is what you might notice. And then more of a promotional follow-up to say, and start educating people if they don't already know what the advantage of natural gas could be to their particular homes.
Dermot?
Right. Thank you very much for your presentation. That was very interesting. We got that. And I would like to know, when do you hope to be coming to Downpatrick? I see Downpatrick, I think it's last on the list, because there will be a time when we're going through a whole lot of traffic resigning of Downpatrick. And I noticed, too, that you like to expand. And I noticed, read today, that gas is very competitive price. The coastal towns of Arglass, Frankfurt and Killoch, you know, I mean, they would like to take advantage of this too as well. Will you be expanding in that direction in the near distant future?
The bill that has been agreed at the moment, as what we've shown you here tonight, for these other towns to come board, as I said before, they would need to be going through a lobbying process to allow us to look at the viability via our regulator to see if we can come to an agreement to take gas to those towns. Again, we will be in favour of that, but it's a conversation that has to be had before we can expand further than what we have at the moment. We're planning to start infill in Downpatrick in 2018 with an infill process running for 4 years through to 2022.
Okay, thanks, Dermot. Kieran
Ogan. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I've got two questions for you. First of all, I've seen various figures about the subsidy for extending the gas network throughout Northern Ireland. I've seen a figure for 40 million given the extension to the west. I think 160 million for the overall extension of gas around Northern Ireland. Are these figures accurate, or what is the accurate figure?
The figures that I'm aware of is certainly the gas to the west was a completely different ballgame, because you can just imagine the stretch of carriageway to get to that part of the province. So that had public funding put into it. My understanding was closer to the 30 million mark, but I was going to say we'd up all over, out over 30 or 40 million, but it was in that range of 30, 40 million to allow natural gas to be a viability for that part of the province. That's a completely different operator again. So we have three operators in Northern Ireland. We have Phoenix Natural Gas, and we've talked about the license we have. We have Firmus Energy, so certainly some of the Newry councillors will be familiar with that brand. And we have SGN, and SGN are responsible for this particular build programme. The money to bring natural gas to the 13 towns that we've outlined tonight had absolutely no public funding inserted into it to make it economically viable. It's all private investment by Phoenix Natural Gas.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks very much for your presentation. Sorry I was late. Most of the points have been covered. I welcome the commentary about the town centres and trying to limit the amount of disruption that will be taking place. And my main question is regards to your contracts and your tenders. And while you've said that local businesses will have their opportunity to obtain the work, do you look for local long-term unemployed and youth apprenticeships to be part of your tender process, or do you consider that when you go out to tender? I'm thinking long-term unemployed, to be employed within the local business who win the tender. In regards to the works themselves, do you build in evening time working conditions? The people that carry out the contractors carry the work out at night, which obviously will speed the process up, but also probably reduce congestion.
Take the first one with regards to any sort of tender that we would be engaging with would be through the construction partner, which in this particular construction development, and as has been for the last 20 years, has been McNicholas. You might be familiar with the brand, the road contractor. And I know that they do engage in working with apprentices and working with long-term unemployed. The detail of that, not sure. With regards to the other work that's undertaken, it is very much the independent industry who are responsible for that. But again, looking at apprenticeships, there's now, following the maturity of the gas industry, a dedicated gas apprenticeship that comes out of a number of different colleges, both in Belfast and beyond, and we'd hope that that opportunity would extend to some of the colleges within this area as well. With regards to the second,
you mentioned night works. It's something we're open to where required. From the design and planning we've been doing so far, it hasn't been identified as a requirement for any of the rural areas we're moving into. Obviously, there are severely increased costs with asking your contractor to work at night, but where we see that it may be a requirement to minimise a potential disruption, around a main road or something that's going to cause major disruption in that area, we'll obviously consider night works at that stage. But at present, we haven't came across any particular section that has justified it. Again, you have the noise problem too. I was going to mention, but where it's seen as a potential way to minimise the impact, we're always open to it as a control. We haven't seen it. We haven't designated anywhere yet. The only main road that we're coming to cross at the moment are the A1 and the M1, and we're going to try to directionally drill beneath those. So hopefully, you won't even be aware that we're there.
Terry? Thanks very much, Chair. And again, I'd like to thank you for your presentation. Just a couple of wee questions I'd like to ask you. Number one, how long do you reckon that the supply of gas will last to service the new network? Number two, I know, and everybody would be aware, there's been a lot of investment by a company that will be put into this. As the only company to supply gas, will you be able to give a commitment to give customers value for money at keen rates and not use your position as a sole company to charge prices?
I think for the first one, Terry would need Mystic Meg.
He's not here, is he?
No. It's kind of Mickey to sort of intervene and give you half a chance on that first question. With regard to to Phoenix. Phoenix don't supply natural gas, so we've been out of that market for about 6 years. And I always get strange looks when I try and explain to friends that we're in the natural gas business, but we don't supply natural gas. And I think that's the development of the market, that and it's for very good reason that we no longer supply natural gas in this competitive marketplace. So you have one network provider. In the maps that Denver has outlined today, you have one network provider, and that's Phoenix Natural Gas. So we're committed to making sure that we bring natural gas to as many places as possible to make it available to businesses and householders. Thereafter, in our licensed area in Greater Belfast, you have seven different suppliers supplying natural gas to both businesses and householders. And I think that's very, very positive for the market, that you have real competition in place. Because certainly, in answer to your question, for the first 10 years where Phoenix Natural Gas were wearing two hats, both a network operator and a supplier, it was always thrown at us that it wasn't particularly competitive only having one supplier. We didn't believe that that was the case because we were growing a market. It was in our interest to make sure the price of natural gas was as low as possible. But I think the market is in as strong a place now, having these range of different suppliers. With regards to gas availability, it is very hard to even attempt sort of answering that question. I think the only thing I would throw in is that whenever you look at, you know, the global market on natural gas, you have a thing now called shale gas. And shale gas, you'll have read from most papers sort of cover this exploration of shale gas and the amount that is coming out of America. America used to be one of the biggest net importers of natural gas. Now it's exporting the stuff, and it's getting on the high seas and going to the market. And what you find now on the east coast of Great Britain, you have a number of different docking stations, and people are investing in now these docking stations to bring this cheaper natural gas into areas of Europe, such as the glut that they're now suggesting is in America. I suppose I don't mean to be a flippant way of answering the question, but given the significant investment that is being put in, you know, this is here for the long term, I suspect.
Yeah, thanks, and thank you again for the presentation. No, I was just interested, just in general terms, as a rural councillor, and I know, you know, we can't expect, you know, to come out into the rural areas, but is there anywhere else in Europe or that it has actually, after a period of consolidation, that the gas has sort of crept out into some of the rural hamlets? You know, I'm just giving a few instances. You know, I know there's areas, for example, just outside Newry, you know, maybe 2 miles, 3 miles out, but there's substantial pockets of population that certainly we would like to see, you know, certainly a program somewhere along the line. But so, has that happened elsewhere? And if it is it liable to happen here? I know you're looking, old mystic mates coming in again here, but certainly.
The gentleman, to your right, sort of made a similar point in that, you know, our glass, for example. Not to bore you, but I live in a little place called Donaghadee. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a good ice cream shop. Donaghadee got natural gas as a result of Bangor getting natural gas. Bangor got natural gas as a result of Belfast having natural gas. Mullyle, which is 3 miles past Donaghadee, got natural gas as a result of Donaghadee getting natural gas. Cumber got natural gas as a result of Mullyle getting natural gas. So it is a stepping stone, it is a hierarchy. The fact that we're now presenting 13 different towns where, you know, 5 years ago we said we weren't coming as this public realm, I think, is positive. I wouldn't like to predict how we get on in the future with regards to new developments, but we're going into, for example, Annahilt, which sits outside this council area, that is 420 properties, something in between those two. It's a small area, but when you get a bulk mains as close as we are going through the likes of our glass now, because what are we? We're 6 miles from our glass, 5.5 miles. So whenever you get within touching distance, it allows council, it allows stakeholders to present those arguments to the decision makers. And very often the decision makers in that regard are the utility regulator, saying there's a demand for natural gas in this area, and, you know, we want it considered to become economically viable to be able to stretch that. And we're all for that. The further we can extend the natural gas network, the better. And the final thing I was going to say is, sorry, Killyleagh was mentioned earlier somewhere along the line. You know, if these areas are within the area in which we have control over, that's good news, but it is a stepping stone with regards to development.
Okay, I think everybody has had their say. Mark, I'm going to let you in the second time, but could you keep our brief?
Yes, Chair, thank you. I just want to go back on one thing for a wee bit more information possibly on it. I think Jarlath raised a very good point there on the new developments. We have one on the Hillsborough Road in Ballinahinch at the moment. I think there's maybe upwards of 100 houses been built. And that site is open. So is it some Jews go in there? Do you fund the actual fitting of the pipes and around the development for a developer? Is there, you know, is there some sort of incentive there for the developer to do that at this stage?
For the developer to future-proof the site so that we can connect it with natural gas, he would then need to engage with us at this point. We would then need to be we would actually have to build the distribution network within that site. That we would then have to engage with Caller to provide the initial supply to that network. So we would build the pipe work the way we normally would if we had gas in the area and install the services to each one of the properties. The problem is, obviously, we don't have a main in the street yet. So then we would have to engage with Caller and they would provide a tank to supply that network until such times as we manage to build our network to that area. That's the way it has to happen. We have to build the pipe works up front because going forward into the future, we obviously hold responsibility for that pipe work. So we can't take on someone else's network. We have to be the people to build it initially.
Yeah, so everybody said the actual network's been put in place. The people are putting in their boilers and cookers and stuff. It's just a matter of conversion then from propane to natural gas.
Yeah. So we've done it in Bangor and we did it in Cumber very successfully. So what we'll be doing at the minute is engaging with local developers now to try to maybe move that forward and future-proof some sites if the interest is there.
You'll engage with them. You'll not rely on them coming to you as such.
No, we have a new build team that proactively does that. I think the one consideration just on top of that, it would be interesting to hear your views on this maybe, but whenever you're working with an apartment block or something like that where fuel costs are considerably lower than maybe some of the private developments, getting these what we call natural gas prepared sites is much more palatable by the builder because the impact of him selling on a house that or a property that has Caller, which sometimes can be more expensive than oil-fired central heating. If Caller were to embrace this, they would look for the likes of a 2-year minimum contract for the householder to take on. So as long as the builder didn't see that as a negative, I'm not suggesting it's a negative, but as long as the builder didn't see it as a negative of being tied to an LPG supplier for a period of 2 years before such times as the network natural gas was to be available.
Yeah, come on. I think it's going to...
Come on, Mark, I didn't say a brief.
it's going to be a challenge, possibly, because people here have never... Well, like Balmain's did have town's gas, but it's in the 40s. Where people aren't used to having gas in their homes, you know, there is that process of education to make them aware of that gas is safe. You know, there's always that fear set of things.
No, I completely agree. You know, we're at the stage now when we have any additional infill in Greater Belfast, as soon as we go into an area, we typically get 20-25% penetration in year one because people have got the message where it's the right time, where there's affordability that they can do it, they do it. We're starting over from scratch, really, and I know they're talking to some of the councillors earlier. There's a little bit of brand recognition in the area, but I think we've got an awful lot of work to do to sort of educate people on what we believe the benefits are, and over and above just having fuel choice, convince them that natural gas is a really good option.
Thank you. Okay, thanks, Chair, for your indulgence.
Okay, can I thank both Denver and Jonathan for their presentation, and no doubt we'll be seeing you in the future, and it's obviously a very exciting addition to the council area, so thank you once again. Okay. Okay, councillors, we have another item to do with IT, but I have to go to a civic reception in the museum, so could I ask for a proposer and a seconder for a councillor to carry on the rest of the meeting? Propose who? Yourself? Sorry, go again. Councillor Cockers, a proposer seconded by Roisin.
Any other proposals?
Any other proposals?
No.
Happy enough? Right, Willie. Come off Facebook there and come off and show them.
See you there, see you shortly, yeah.
we'll send you a copy of the presentation.
All right.
Just get the details here, folks. We're having a quorum. We need to get another councillor in. So. Is he? Oh, Brian's there. We're all right then. This is Molly. He's coming back. He has been here. Out of 10 now. You need the time for a decision. Okay. Right, Daryl. Where are you at?
Right up beside you.
You stay in your places. Close the doors.
Heck!
There's no anyway.
Complicated business.
To do elections.
I think they're picking on the new chairman.
Love to join. We'll start the presentation. I'd like to welcome Jules Jackson and Guy Middleton from Activity Business Solutions, who are going to give us a presentation in regards to the IT. I don't know who's leading.
No, I'm going to speak into this. And despite it being about IT, I'm going to speak to you like a human instead of having a presentation here. So we're from Acuity Business Solutions. What we do, our business is to help organisations with IT and business change. So what we do is we help them get the best value out of defining what's needed in terms of IT, on buying it often, implementing it. But we also have full life cycle experience, so we support organisations in running IT as well. We've been engaged by the council to help with the transformation of IT. And by transformation, what I mean is the modernisation and the driving out of efficiency from the council's IT services. We've been at it about 2 weeks now, so far we've been collecting information about what the requirement is and what the current situation is. When we talk about IT, we're talking about all aspects of IT, so the devices that you use, the infrastructure behind it, so the network, the Wi-Fi and so on, the applications, but also, most importantly, the information that resides in those systems and is accessed through those devices. So the whole scope of IT services is what we're looking at. What we're here to do today is to outline that project for you, describe what we're doing in practice, what the practical outcomes of the work we're doing will be, and particularly to take any suggestions, advice, or questions that you might have about that today at this early stage. So when we're talking about IT transformation, there's essentially two facets to this. It's like a big iceberg. The by far the largest volume of it is that part of IT services which is not visible to the citizen. So this is our internal IT services. And the heavy focus there is on using IT to make our processes, our business processes, more efficient. And that, bluntly, is about saving money. It's about freeing up money which is spent in the manual processing of invoices and a whole range of other council services, freeing up money from those processes to be used in more useful ways at your direction. It's also increasingly about better information for decision making. So the information that we're talking about, the collection of that information and the management of that information is intended to make better decision making possible, basically so that you guys will know what's happening within the organisation. It also makes it much easier for staff and councillors to work together, and as in so doing, it means that council services are better for citizens. The other part of the iceberg, the bit that is seen by citizens, is about the direct interaction of citizens with our IT services. So when they want to get information from us, or when we want to get information from them, when they want to provide us with information, they interact directly with our information management systems, with our IT. So the transformation of both of those aspects is what we're talking about. So the background to IT transformation is three big drivers. So there's three big things driving change to IT services of the council. The first, of course, is the merger. So although a lot of work has been done to standardise systems between the two councils, the two legacy councils, there's still work to do there. So we aren't yet on a consolidated single IT platform. The second major driver, probably the biggest, in fact, is the corporate plan. So the corporate plan lays out very ambitious requirements for IT in the future. We're talking about supporting new services, so the infrastructure, the IT services that go with new leisure centres, for example. We're talking also about modernisation of the council services, and we're talking about requirement for more information to be collected and information to be used in different ways. So the corporate plan says a great deal, in fact, about what is required from IT. The third driver is that in the time since our IT systems were bought, the market has changed. So it's now possible to get more commoditized services. It's easy. It's got there are products available which are easier to join together. And those systems are much more powerful. So what's available, what we need, and the requirements from the merger are all the big drivers behind this transformation of IT. So in terms of what we're doing, the first thing is we're making a plan, a 3 to 5 year plan. We expect to finish that by around the end of June. That's the first stage in a longer process. What we'll do is we'll look, first of all, at the information that the council needs to run its business, not just now, but in the future as well. We'll look at how our staff, our councillors, and our citizens will use that information. So what are we going to do with it? What kind of tools are we going to use? So what devices will we access it on? What will it look like on those screens? How will we join up information to make it more powerful? We'll take a look at the technology that we use today. We're already pretty clear from the people we've spoken to, even just in the first couple of weeks, that there are some gaps. So there are some services, some IT features, some products that we simply don't have at all and that we would like to have. And there are some that we have but that don't work as well as they might do and that we need to fix in some way. We'll also look at the way we manage and deliver IT. So basically how the IT function engages with the rest of the business and who does what activities to do with IT. So taking into account that requirement and the potential solution in the form of the technologies available, we'll create an implementation plan. And that plan is about prioritising the fixes and the new IT. It's about managing the pace of change also. So we talked just now about the very great volume of change to IT that is driven particularly by the corporate plan. The business will take some time to absorb that change. So as we start working in different ways with new tools, then we'll need to manage that pace of change. And we'll also need to make sure that all the different pieces of technology work well together, so they actually deliver the outcome that's intended. A very important feature of that plan is that we will identify urgent things that can safely be done now. What I mean by that is, with this big stack of workload ahead in terms of IT services that need to be changed or implemented. We're not going to know everything about the future requirement right at the outset. What we will be able to do is to identify enough of that requirement to be able to select things to do today which are not likely to need to be redone in the future. So a lot of what we'll do is remove that risk. And what that will do is mean that implementation of what is ultimately quite a long period of work can begin quickly. So plan at the end of June, and implementation will already start very shortly after that. So that was all I was intending to say, other than in response to any questions or observations that you might have.
A couple of things there. I think that something that we've lacked with, and maybe just not, well, it says, I suppose it is, to do with our IT systems and bringing them together. But it's if we can look at bringing in a single database. You know, we sit in various committees and we talk about wanting to engage with the business community. And there's a wee bit of a database here and a wee bit there and a wee bit somewhere else. We don't have anywhere that we can go and say, this is every business that we have in our district.
Yeah.
And allow us then to communicate with them. You know, so you know, I'd like to see something like that. And from a councillor point of view, it's very frustrating at times. You know, we've a laptop, we've an iPad. We can do some things in the iPad. We have to use the laptop to do some other things, and God forbid we try to do them on our iPhone. You know, so you know, some means of trying to streamline that a bit and make, like, we're generally all busy people. And these devices are supposed to help us, not hinder us. You know, there's times, calendars, simple thing like a calendar. And there's some items you can't move from one device to another. You know, so, yes, I welcome this happening. I think we do need to get more advanced with our IT and start to use a cloud and whatever and bring the benefits of that.
Can I just make a comment on that? One of the things that's arisen quite early on, as you would imagine, is around the information management requirements and exactly what you allude to there in terms of, I guess, a consolidated view of all of the information that the council holds and wants to get at and use in a kind of meaningful and interpretive way so that you can start to engage with the community and really understand what's going on out there and deliver services and accordingly. So that's one of the things that will be on the implementation plan about how you bring together, I guess, different and disparate sources of information, not necessarily into one database, but at least into a way of being able to get at it in a much more accessible way and to be able to use it to start making decisions that, you know, help you. So, excuse me, so very much on the roadmap so far. So.
Yeah, just to follow along with what Mark said there, I have to agree with him there. Getting information from one to the other and between the iPad and the laptop is a bit of a problem. But this new system, is there going to be any speed with it? Because, like, when you go on there, sometimes you wonder, is the world going to turn at all? You know, and getting logged on in the morning time is an absolute disaster sometimes. Will that all be speeded up?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing is we're not talking about a single system. We're talking about an infrastructure of systems that will all work together. So very much different devices may access different things in different ways, but they'll be tailored to what you need. And speed is an important consideration. So what we'll be doing is stepping back, identifying what people need to use their devices for. So some things have to work on your phone. Calendaring, you mentioned, is an obvious thing that you need in your pocket the whole time. So we'll look at the requirement. But also look at where you'll have that requirement. Is it only in an office? Is it out on the road in another office? Or is it out in the countryside in the car? What works well is to take a view not of those two things together, of the requirement and geographically where it is, and make a plan for how to get that service to you. So absolutely, that's on the list.
Yeah, just we need all three, just what you've said. Not one of those. We need all three, and that's what we're needing, especially in the countryside. You know, some days you wonder if you're going to get logged on at all or not.
Yeah.
That'd be okay. Just in regards, one of the big issues I would see is in moving forward is community planning, you know, and the number of stakeholders are going to be involved and the amount of data that's going to have to be at least shared. You know, I think this is a real opportunity in regards to that. It's a bit like what Mark's talking about, the data even for the business community, you know. I think this is a good opportunity now to, you know, to streamline that as best we can, or at least make it compatible. Because we've taken on extra responsibilities. Regeneration from DSD will be coming next year, I think. We've also been planning, has been taken on board, and there's numerous issues about planning and about agents and, you know, submitting information. And, you know, so them types of pieces of work would have to be looked at.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the most interesting challenges we've got ahead, which is that... The volume of data of the kind that you're speaking of there, so information about businesses and citizens, it's simply not possible to deal with those with traditional tools. You can't do that on a spreadsheet. You need to think about data in a much wider sense in order to select the right tools for handling that kind of data. But it's absolutely central to the work of the council. So a very exciting challenge there.
Brian?
Yes, thank you. Although my point is not about your presentation, it links into it. As was already said by Robert, in a lot of the rural areas, the work has gone so far in improving access to the broadband services and the lights. They have installed a lot of the cables. Some places they've installed the cabinets, but they haven't got them connected up yet. Now, there's areas through my DA that these things were supposed to be brought online back in October, and we're still waiting on them. So perhaps the council could contact these organisations who are supposed to be doing this work and find out, will it be ready by the time the council's new system is ready?
I suppose, Chairman, two things. Sort of separate issue in terms of the provision of broadband. BT are rolling out the cabinets across, and there is a progression rollout, I know, in terms of my own area, in terms of South Armagh, has been reactivated roughly with the Christmas time there, parts of it, so I know there's a rollout. But yeah, we can contact Frank McManus from BT and get a time scale for them on that.
Everybody happy enough?
Yeah.
Roisin, sorry.
Yeah, thanks for your presentation, and I'm going to have to be the first to admit that I am not into IT whatsoever, but I do know that the IT department always seems to be amazingly busy and under an awful lot of pressure. Their phone never stops ringing, and I know certainly towards about the 5th or 6th of the month when we are all trying to do our mileage, there's normally maybe up in 20 councillors phoning because we can't access our mileage system on the laptop. And the reality of it is an awful lot of us only use a laptop for doing our mileage. You know, everything else we can do on our iPad, and it just seems like a very expensive piece of kit for 41 councillors to have been provided with to do a mileage. Now, in the past, we used to be able to do it in paper, and for some dinosaurs, pen and paper worked very well, but we're not allowed to do that now. And, you know, that in itself adds a lot of pressure on to IT when you have 20 people phoning them up at the end of the month saying, can you please reset my password? My laptop has locked on me automatically. And those sorts of things are a complete and utter waste of time and resources, you know. So it's good that it's all going to be looked at.
Just another point that just came to me. Obviously, the council, since the merger, we operate on a split site. You know, so there is big mileage. I think Roisin's touching on it. There's big mileage, but particularly staff. You know, and I think we should be maximising the use of IT in regards to doing meetings. And obviously, we need to look at the infrastructure to do that. But there's also good opportunities then to, you know, engage with the community, do consultations, you know, get into schools. You know, so it's about having the IT fit for purpose. Now, this chamber was built for them types, and our meeting rooms were built for that types of engagement. But I'm not sure if the IT is sufficient to carry that out. You know, so it would be really useful, you know, to be able to do that.
Certainly, what Roisin said and what you've said are high on our list. So the right kind of device for accessing different kinds of application in the case of the at the expenses form, the mileage form, and of video conferencing, absolutely vital. And particularly your point about being able to do that from wherever. So
yes.
Split site, obviously, but also out in the community from some non-council premises. So very much on the list.
Right, thank
absolutely.
You. Okay, folks, thanks very much, Guy and Jules, for the presentation. We look forward to feeding into the process at another occasion. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.